Now, from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, and Jeff Lagerman.
All right, here we are live at Everbank. Glad you're with us in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studio. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Jeff Lagerman, as we go and check out the tape. What do we say is going to be, Tony, a Check the Tape Tuesday?
Check the Tape Tuesday.
I like that, right? We got Film Room Friday for Jeff. He's got Check the Tape Tuesday. We got to come up with some kind of catchy name for this. I don't think they use tape anymore, but you get the idea. Loggy, you kind of gave your – I think you agreed with Dan's assessment of the overall big picture view of the Jacksonville Jaguars. If there's one area that – you feel let you down for your expectations going into this one particular unit or one area, one aspect of the offense or defense or special teams, what would that have been this week?
You know, I really wasn't disappointed in any area. In fact, some areas I was very concerned about, like the left side of the offensive line, I was very impressed by. That was an area that I was going, what's going to happen here? And defensively, you know, my expectations weren't, great just because of the lack of playing time together and so many new moving parts. But I thought the defense played pretty well against, you know, a great quarterback and a great quarterback that historically has been very good out of the gate.
You would take 199 yards against Aaron Rodgers every single time. You take his final stat line with the touchdowns and everything.
And you got the ball with a chance to win.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever you thought of the plan, them not getting as much pass rush as I think a lot of people expected, you hold them to under 200 yards, and you get the ball with an opportunity to go win the football game. That's well executed as you can get.
Yeah, you know, look, the whole pass rush thing against Aaron Rodgers, you know, there's a lot of different philosophies, and I think a little bit of the blueprint that they had was what Mike Zimmer has been doing against Aaron Rodgers since his time in Minnesota. Mike Zimmer is one of the most respected defensive minds in football, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And when they got success against Aaron Rodgers, they had that approach last year, late in the season, to where they just wanted to bracket him, keep him in the pocket, and make him a true pocket passer. Because Aaron is at his best, like I showed in Film Room Friday last week on Jaguars.com, was when he can extend the play and just make things happen, especially with a wide receiving core that he has not had a lot of reps with. One of them's coming back from an injury. You know, the biggest wide receiver in Jordy Nelson. Aaron only had like 9 attempts in the preseason, so you knew that they weren't going to have a lot of chemistry and timing. So the big concern, I think, would have more so been when the timing or the off-schedule plays start to occur. And I thought they did a pretty good job. The one aspect, I think, defensively that impressed me very, very much so was the coverage. I mean, the amount of time that they had to cover because of him just extending the play, which he always does, I thought was very good.
And to still hold him to those numbers,
yes,
right?
Very
I thought
good.
Prince Amukamara really stood out particularly
very,
in
yeah,
in
he
coverage.
Yeah, he was really good. The one area that was I was not impressed with in the secondary, Jonathan Cyprien's got to be better.
In what regard? Because he obviously missed a big tackle on Lacy, which was terrible, right? Mm-hmm. He had the PI, but we've debated whether that, you know, in the scheme of how that game was being called, was that really pass interference? Beyond those plays.
He shouldn't have been in the position in the first place on the pass interference. You know, if he positions his body a little bit better and gets his head back around, that's a no-call all day long.
Didn't he get his head around?
No.
It looked to me like he got his head around
watching
the
replay. He was kind of falling back into the guy and never really truly got his head back around. The missed tackle, you know, you hear coaches always, and especially Gus Bradley, talk about tackling plans. You know, and Eddie Lacy is a big man. I mean, he's like trying to tackle an oak tree. He's thick. And he's thick in the middle. And I think one play was a perfect example of how you did not execute the tackling plan, because that was the play that Jonathan Cyprien missed the tackle. And Eddie bounced off and ended up going down the sideline. And then on the same play.
So what is the tackling plan, though? Not to interrupt.
Tackling plans, hit him low.
Right, to wrap that leg and wait for help,
yeah,
right, in that
absolutely.
Instance. Yeah.
And, you know, it was perfectly executed on that play by Tashaun Gibson, because, you know, Cyprien misses the tackle because he hits him right in the belly. And that's the widest part of Eddie Lacy. You can't wrap him around that area, especially when he's got the ball in his hands and he's trying to push you off. Well, he skirts down the sideline, and here comes Tashaun Gibson, and he knifes the legs out. When Cyprien came in, he should have done the same thing, came in and knifed at the legs and grabbed, you know, instead of trying to grab around the waist when he's just too
power
big.
To the ground, right?
Yeah, he's just too big.
All right, well, look, we'll talk more about Sip and what may be able to be done in that secondary to improve that, if anything, in the short term with San Diego coming up on the schedule. If you'd like to get in with Jeff Lagerman today, There are many ways you can do it. You can do it on Twitter, answer our question of the day, our social media question of the day, which asks you which individual player needs to step up his game the most this week against San Diego to give the Jags the best chance to beat the Chargers. You can weigh in on that on Twitter at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at Logs56, that's LOGS56. Jaguars Today Facebook page is rolling, 641-1010 on the phone lines and also the text line, driven by Duval Ford as well. We'll take your calls throughout if you have specific questions for Jeff on what he saw in the film, and we'll certainly try to ask some of the pertinent questions based on the Jags' performance in Week 1 as well. With Fat Tony, with Jeff Logman, I'm Mike Dempsey. We are live at Everbank. It's Jaguars Today just rolling on this Check the Tape Tuesday on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, this is Jaguars Today.
All right, we are live in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios here at Everbank Field. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Jeff Logman here with you on a Check the Tape Tuesday. That's what we'll be doing today. We're going to check the audio tape right now. Gus Bradley had his typical Monday press conference post-game.
You all right over there?
I got a little choked up there thinking about Gus and
Gus,
how emotional
everyone's
he was.
Maybe
so
you were looking at your
still.
Fantasy numbers over there.
I was looking at your fantasy numbers, and I was like, oh, no, not again. He's not going to win this thing again, is he? It's unbelievable. No, I'll tally those up for later. No, Gus Bradley yesterday, after a day to reflect, here's what he had to say about the Jags' performance.
It's tough. You know, we talked about we don't accept defeat. Our guys are having a hard time with this one right now in the locker room. But they're in meetings now, meeting with our coaches and going through some of the things that took place. But I mentioned yesterday it was a hard-fought game. You see it on tape, too. Two teams really battled. You know, when you look back at the beginning of the game, it didn't start the way we'd hoped. You know, we came out and threw an interception, then our defense went out in the field, in the short field, and gave up a touchdown. That's not exactly how we wanted to start. But what I give credit to this team is the poise they had. You know, it wasn't like, oh, here it comes, you know, what's going to happen? There was none of that. The attention on the sideline, their focus on the sideline was great. I know after that series, there was a couple of times where we exchanged punts between both teams. And then we really started to get on a roll. It started off with Brad Nortman's punt, where he pinned him down inside the five. And then the defense came out and got a three and out. It was a huge part right there. And I think it was that poise at the beginning of the game, the confidence that we had, you know, we're going to get this thing right. Really held true there. And then we came back offensively. I think Mercedes had a big screen play, and T.J. Yeldon scored to get it back to 7-7. And then it went back and forth, a couple good punts again, and then a couple three and outs that were strong. And next thing you know, we're up in the game. So I think those are all real good things for our team to understand and learn from.
Unhappiest you've seen Gus in a post-game locker room since he's been here?
You know, not so much him, but, you know, in all the years of underneath Dave and Gus, I don't think I ever remember going into a locker room at any point in the season and seeing just nothing. You know, I'm talking disappointment, quiet, frustration. I mean, this clearly was a team that expected more, expected to win. And I think that's the thing I think about the mindset that I like so much about this game, the thing that impressed me the most. I mean, first of all, the first game of the year is always difficult because it's 60 minutes. You know, you're used to playing in the preseason for 15, 20, maybe 30 snaps, and then you're out. And the hardest thing to overcome is early in the game disappointment. And I think that they were able to do that, and they fought back and with an opportunity to win. And I was literally I was happy after the game to walk into that locker room and just feel it, to feel that disappointment, to feel that level of quiet, which I haven't felt in a long time, which indicates to me this is a team that expects very big things out of themselves.
641-1010 if you'd like to get in this morning, and we're going to start with Ken in Mandarin up on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Ken.
Morning, guys. How y'all doing?
Good, buddy.
Good.
I got a question on the first penalty on this game, which was a 12-man-on-the-field penalty. No flag was thrown on that play. However, the Green Bay Packers were able to challenge that and have a flag thrown on that play. How does that work? And if that's been a something that's always been, where have I been? You know,
it hasn't always been.
No,
but it's been for the last few years.
Yeah, it's been recently changed where they expanded challengeable areas during a football game, and that's an excellent challenge by Mike McCarthy. That's something that all coaches, I think, are somewhat concerned about in the first game of the year because, you know, the rotation and trying to get it down pat is always difficult. And on top of that, with the heat and the amount of guys that you're rotating through the game, sometimes that can happen. I believe it happened with a couple other games this weekend as well. Substitution issues happened last night in the Redskins game, yep, where they didn't even have a guy out on the field for a field goal attempt.
Right.
You know, so it happens. Was it a major blow? It didn't help, you know, because all of a sudden you made that third down much shorter than what it was,
yeah,
and it made it easier on Mike McCarthy and the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, and it's not a subjective call. It's an easy one. The ref just counts bodies at the snap of the football. So it's in, you know, it's either yes or no, and that's why it's a good thing to include, I think, in replay. And like you said, for the last couple of years, it's been the case.
Well, and I think when you go up against a guy like Aaron Rodgers, one of these veteran quarterbacks, if you watch the Packers on a week-to-week basis, it feels like Aaron gets you in one of those once a week where you are trying to substitute and he takes advantage of that opportunity. I thought, look, in the end, he scored the touchdown. But when that play happened, I thought, whew, they got away with it there. Because that's one where usually you watch Aaron Rodgers just take a shot, and instead they weren't able to make that shot pay off. It paid off a couple plays later. It's, you know, you talk about jumping off sides against Aaron Rodgers and him getting those free opportunities. That was one of those that they gave Aaron Rodgers. It didn't bite him at that moment. It did a few plays later.
Yeah, and that's the advantage, you know, when you've got a veteran quarterback who is a smart veteran quarterback. Not all veteran quarterbacks are aware of certain scenarios like that, but an excellent play by Aaron Rodgers. I mean, that's just another example of what makes him a great player.
Here's what Gus had to say yesterday just about the penalty situation in general.
We had 9 penalties, and there's probably 4 or 5 of them that were more foolish penalties. You know, the offsides and the one on our sideline, you know, that we had. You know, those are the ones that there's always going to be maybe 1 or 2 of those, but 5 is too many. And I think that's what we need to knock down. But, you know, some of our penalties are going to be aggressive in nature. You know, some of the, you know, defensive holding or, you know, at the line of scrimmage because we play so much press, some of those could happen. But the foolish penalties, we got, you know, knock those down.
And he's right. I mean, the offsides, you know, the one thing that every team in the league does, and they talked about it during the week, was Aaron Rodgers' ability to use cadence to his advantage. And every NFL team now gets the TV copy of the games that, you know, the opponents have done, whether it's last year, 2 years ago, or whenever. And so I know that they heard how Aaron Rodgers works the cadence. So it's disappointing that they had as many as they did. It's not disappointing that they had them because, I mean, you're going to have some. I mean, that's just what, another part that makes Aaron Rodgers great. Now, the penalty on Malik Jackson, that was, to me, unacceptable. That can't happen. It was on the sideline where Paul Posluszny was tackling Randall Cobb. Randall Cobb grabs the face mask of Paul Posluszny, which was a clear penalty.
And they're like 3 yards out of bounds, plays over.
It would have backed the Green Bay Packers up to a very long third down opportunity, but instead it was offsetting, allowed them to replay the down at a third and short. And I'm not saying that you would have gotten off the field, but you would have been in a heck of a lot better scenario with a third and long versus a third and short again.
Yeah, by the way, I mean, look, I get it. You're not allowed to do it. It's not like he bowled him over. You know, he gave him a little shove. Randall Cobb put his shoulder right into his chest.
Yeah, he initiated.
He totally initiated. And the ref stands there and they watch a guy initiate it.
That's, you know that, though.
I know. Look, I'm not excusing Malik. It's just, it mystifies me how you don't watch this guy bait him, right? But you see him bait him. It's happening right in front of you, and the flag always goes on the second guy.
But as a player, you have to know that 9 times out of 10, they call the reaction.
I agree. I'm not saying I'm excusing Malik Jackson. He shouldn't have done it. You got to keep your cool there. And like you said, then you probably get him off the field.
And what he should have done was laughed. I mean, what is Randall Cobb?
Right. Compared to Malik, he's half his weight. Exactly. Unbelievable. All right. Let's go to Blake at the beaches. Next up this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Blake.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
Overall, I thought it was a good game. I'm glad to see us, you know, compete in the fourth quarter and with a chance to win, being so disappointed and all. I thought reputation played a part in it yesterday, meaning that Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers guy had the better reputation with the umpires, so they got more calls than we got, and if it was close, they got a few calls. I thought the neutral zone infraction down close to our goal line was a BS call. You know, I thought later on in the day, I saw the same call in another game, and the ref called it the opposite way, said it wasn't a neutral zone infraction, where the Green Bay offensive lineman just immediately jumped out of his stance and pointed at our guy. it wasn't a reaction at all. And I thought, you know, Aaron Rodgers got that call. He got a few other calls. Jonathan Cyprian, it's about time I think we draft his replacement or look for his replacement. He has more missed tackles and where he just won't put his arms around a guy and take him to the ground than anybody I've seen on the team. He's killing him. And well, I won't talk about lack of pass.
Let me start with the neutral zone infraction, and Blake brings up a great point. I don't think that the Jaguars front got into the neutral zone on that one that was down in the red zone. But it was called, and I was kind of going, you know, during the game, you're like, okay, they got in the neutral zone, but watching the tape, you don't have a great angle to see it. But from the angle that I was able to look at, I was going, I don't know if they're in the neutral zone on this one. So that's a little bit of a question mark.
And but they do teach offensive linemen now, if the guy comes in the neutral zone, react to it.
If he's
and
in
start,
the neutral.
Right, if
absolutely.
He does, and you point to it, and you're going to get that call as an offensive
absolutely.
Lineman.
Absolutely. Now, the biggest question mark when you talk about reputation, yeah, that kind of occurs. And I wonder, you know, with Allen Robinson, is his reputation not good enough yet around the league? Because, I mean, two of those calls were very easy to make, and they weren't made. I mean, when you turn the body with the offhand before the ball arrives, I mean, that's a clear interference. He got held on another one, the one that where he was going into the south end zone.
Could have scored.
He got hooked.
Yep.
Yeah.
He got hooked. I mean, and to me, that should have been a call. But, you know, I mean, that's part of it. That's part of it. You got to be able to overcome some of them things as a team, and eventually this team will get to the point that they can overcome that. Now, the last part, what was he talking about in the last part?
Something about pass rush right at the end there.
Yeah.
Got cut
now,
off.
There was something else that he was Cyprian.
Oh, Cyprian, yeah, yeah.
You know, and he said, you know, I wish that they would draft his replacement. They did.
Sample.
James
right.
Sample.
Can't stay healthy.
You know,
hasn't been able
and
to.
Unfortunately, he's on injured reserve, and I've said all offseason that I thought that he would win the job. And I still believe that if he were healthy, he would be the starting strong safety. And if he wasn't in week one, he would be now.
Right. So they did try to address that situation. You can't, you know, you can't be four deep at every position and cover for injuries. Can Peyton Thompson play? I mean, if it goes down this road far enough and Sip continues to miss tackles or give up big plays or whatever the case may be, you know, do you consider using him?
Well, first of all, I think Cyprian will get better. And that's the one thing I think that kind of drives you a little bit crazy about Cyprian is it's up and down. You know, you got one week to where it looks really good, and then the next week it's not so great. And if it continues, you know, to be down, at some point you're going to make a change, not because you feel like the other option is better, but just to make the point that, look, what we're getting is not good enough. The next man up would be the rookie undrafted free agent from Michigan, Jared Wilson. He is the guy that is playing the true strong safety spot right now in the rotation. Marquestin Huff is going to be more of a free. He's going to be available this week. And then Peyton Thompson is more of a swing free safety slash nickel slash corner, but not the strong.
A lot of people have asked, and so I figure I'll ask you about it. Should they come up with a package in a nickel situation where you're not going to make Miles Jack or Telvin Smith your strong safety, but that in just a certain down and distance, if Miles Jack is so good at coverage, Telvin's got that great speed, that you get those guys and get Cyprian off the field in some kind of
maybe,
package.
Maybe, but that's difficult because you're trying to train another guy at another new position. That would be kind of hard to do. Now, in this week's game, I don't want to say I was surprised that Miles Jack didn't play at all because, I mean, he's been playing two different positions. He's still young. This is the Green Bay Packers and Aaron Rodgers. But if there were a game that would be on the schedule to where you'd say, you know, boy, we'd really like to be able to utilize Miles Jack talent, this might be the week. You know, Danny Woodhead is an excellent receiver out of the backfield. He's got great speed. He's shifty. That's a matchup you would feel good about with Miles Jack covering him. And with the loss of Keenan Allen, you know that,
yeah, a lot more attention on Woodhead.
Phillip Rivers is going to go with some of the other guys that have been there for a while and lean on them more so, and I would expect them to lean on Woodhead even more.
Quick, before we break, Telvin Smith, I thought, to my untrained eye, I thought he played very well.
Played very well, and I was very happy to see that. You know, he had a little bit of a snafu in the Jets game in the preseason where he had a couple issues in coverage. He was, I thought, he had energy, he was disciplined. He did his responsibility, and he tackled extremely
with
well.
With authority.
Yes, yeah. Very well.
I'm with you on that. All right, Jeff Logman's in the house with us. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on Jaguars today on this Tuesday, checking out what Log saw on the film. You can get in at 641-1010. Social media question of the day: which Jaguar needs to step up their game the most in order to give them the best chance to beat the San Diego Chargers coming up this Sunday? It's 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Jaguars Daily is brought to you by Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the official sports medicine provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Now, running back Chris Ivory remained hospitalized on Monday after being admitted with a general medical condition that forced him to miss Sunday's game against the Packers. Now, the team said on Monday that his status for Sunday's game against San Diego is still in question. Now, in his place against the Packers was T.J. Yeldon, and head coach Gus Bradley talked about the takeaways from Sunday's run game performance.
It felt like we were straying. It felt like we were running the ball hard. And then when I looked at the stats at the end of the game, you know, but there were some lost yardage runs, you know, that add up to it. But I felt like T.J. ran really hard and made some people miss, and we just didn't get any explosive runs. We can strain, hold on longer to blocks, and block things a little bit better.
This has been Jaguars Daily, brought to you by JOI. I'm Jordan DeArmond.
Jeff Lagerman lays down the law. Jeff Lagerman Tuesday on Jaguars Today is brought to you by Crockett Law PL Real Estate Law. Now more with Jeff Lagerman.
All right, Check the Tape Tuesday rolls on. Jaguars Today, live from Everbank. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, and Jeff Lagerman here with you on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Phone lines are loaded up at 641-1010, so let's get out to them. Starting with Nick on the north side. Nick, good morning. How are you?
Doing pretty good. Thanks for the call. Let me come on there. Hey, I just got a question for you guys. I'm pretty satisfied with the Jaguars. They look pretty good. They're fighting the whole time, looking good. My question to you is the very end there, 4th-and-1, you know, they're trying so hard to get this win, and then the play call at the end is just are y'all satisfied with that play call at the end?
Nope.
Just throwing it completely sideways? I mean,
I can't speak for you, Jeff. Go ahead.
Go
ahead, Nick. I thought you were done.
Do you think as a player, trusting the coach's play call, as get to the very end as a player, are you just so disappointed to see that kind of play call, or are you just like, we just got to work on it? What's your feeling on that?
I don't have a problem with the play call whatsoever. I mean, the only thing I'm disappointed in is that it didn't work. We're actually going to be breaking this down tonight on Jaguars All Access. That my entire film segment is dedicated to that play. You know, it's a run-pass option. And to give you the Cliff Notes audio version, if he comes to the line of scrimmage, TJ's in an offset back to Blake's left. If the defense is showing a look to where run is effective, they underneath hand it off to T.J. Yeldon. He goes to the right, but the Packers had four defenders of that side with three blockers, so that's not going to work. The complement to that play for the run is the quarterback keeper. Well, Clay Matthews is on the other side. How many times have you seen Clay Matthews bite on the run fake versus the quarterback?
Not much.
He doesn't do it.
The quarterback.
Yeah.
Right.
He doesn't do it. So, okay, so now the run plays are dead, okay? So your next option is the little wide receiver bubble screen, which is the play that they ran. And Allen Robinson is lined up, what is he, to the outside. Hearns is to the inside, and it's true zero coverage. It's man coverage. Nobody's back deep whatsoever. Allen Robinson needs to do a better job of blocking Hearns' guy. Hearns has to do a better job of planting his foot and going to the outside, because now Allen Robinson's guy is the only guy that can stop Allen Hearns from gaining 1 yard if Allen Robinson blocked Allen Hearns' guy. Okay? That's not a bad play call. Make one block, make one guy miss to gain 1 yard. That's not a bad play call. The complement to that, which probably would have worked beautifully, is the fake block by Allen Robinson, and then he goes vertical.
Slipping, yeah.
And to where both defenders, because Demarius Randall, the cornerback who makes the initial hit on Allen Hearns, did a wonderful job. He was the one who had the reaction up to come up and make the tackle. His reaction was so fast that if Allen Robinson does that fake block and gets vertical, it's a touchdown. It's a touchdown. Now, so in hindsight, you'd say, okay, maybe we should have called the compliment. But in reality, if you haven't run that play yet in the game, do you feel comfortable calling a compliment play when you haven't seen the original? You know, so I'm not disappointed in the play call whatsoever. in a perfect world and you had a do-over again, you know, where you could, you know, get in the Michael J. Fox time machine, the DeLorean, and go back and do it again, you'd call that compliment to where Allen Robinson's going vertical and he's dancing in the end zone celebrating six.
Then, now, any time in the future, I would call something that brings the receiver past the sticks when the ball gets there. That's me. I would not run a play behind the line of scrimmage. Saw it again last night. It was so inept. The San Francisco ran the exact same play.
But
of course,
you know,
Gabbert
here's
one
the thing,
on that one.
Here's the thing that I like about it. Those are two of your best players on your team, and you're putting it on the three best player shoulders. Blake to make the throw, throws there. Allen Hurns to make a move, and Allen Robinson to make a block. When you get in crunch time and you make a play call that where you're dependent on your three best players, I'm all for it.
I understand that, but if you run a quick slant, all you're counting on is Blake to make the throw. I mean, you still got to make the catch, but that's part of what Hurns needed to do as well.
If it's a fade to Ben Koyak, I got a problem with the play
call. I understand that, but you can use your best players, I think, more effectively on that play. I mean, the two schools of thought are out there on it. We're not going to change each other's minds. All right. Let's go on to Joe on the west side. Wants to talk Luke Jokel. What's up, Joe? How are you?
Hey, good morning. How y'all doing? I've finally seen Luke Jokel play his best game that I've seen him play as a Jaguar. I've been a Jaguar fan ever since they've been around, and he gets one of the worst holding penalties that I've ever seen. What
Bad
was
call.
The deal on that? Is it because nobody's giving us respect?
Bad call. You know, you go back to, what was it, the playoff game in Pittsburgh to where David Garrard has the scramble and makes it. The same type of thing occurred, you know, on that play. It wasn't called. You know, offensive linemen are engaged with defensive linemen and always have a hold of cloth. And unless it's just obvious to where you're snatching the guy back while you're blocking him as the quarterback escapes up into the pocket, that's never called.
I thought it was obvious. To me, again, Bortles – Luke's blocking him, and Bortles runs off of his right side, right, kind of up the middle. And, look, he's engaged, and he's got a hold of the jersey, but that's fine because his hands are inside. He's got him up on the shoulder pads. And then as the defensive lineman moves over, he goes towards Bortles, and I see that jersey stretch out because Jokel still got a hold of it. I watched it on the replay.
I don't know what you watched. The jersey didn't stretch. And here's the other thing.
Absolutely.
Dan Scuda, on the flip side of things, Dan Scuda is held in a worse fashion by the left tackle Bakhtiari when Aaron Rodgers escaped and scrambled. It was on the left side of the field, kind of towards the north end zone. And Dan Scuda was held worse than that, and it was not called.
I'm not saying that they didn't blow a bunch of calls or miss a bunch of calls or that it was even.
Well, my thing is, look, if you're going to call that, then you have to call the other one on Dan Scuda. If you're going to call the one on Cyprian for interference, then you need to call the two that are on Allen Robinson.
I'm not arguing that.
That's the problem that I had with that game, is that the officiating, and going back to the point earlier that one of our callers made about how, you know, reputation going into a game sometimes can impact the way a game is called. To me, I would agree with that, because this was not an evenly called game if you're comparing apples to apples and oranges to oranges.
All right, let's go to Alan in East Arlington, I believe, also on the Luke Jokel topic. Good morning, Alan.
Yes, before I get to that, let me just pass along a compliment. Jeff, I tell you what, I can listen to you analyze and procrastinate and so forth and present your information. You're just a pleasure to listen to on the radio, and especially on Jacksonville.com, or excuse me, Jaguars.com. Really enjoy it. You're welcome. The other thing I was going to mention was, can we get off of Luke Jokel's back? It is over with. Put it behind us, because it looks like maybe we found a pretty good spot for him there at the left guard. That's what I had to say.
No, I think you bring up a good point, and to me it's a great point based on one game. Luke Jokel played very well, very well. And if you looked at the game, I would say he had three plays that you can consider a possible minus. I wouldn't consider the one the hold. But the other two that he had, he got powered by Dayton Jones a little bit, but he still wasn't on his back or didn't end up on his butt. The next one, though, because the next rush that Dayton Jones had over him, Luke was remembering the previous play, I'm sure, about getting powered, and tries to sit, gets his head down, drops, and then he ends up getting swam. And then it's immediate pressure on Blake Bortles. But other than that, Luke Jokel was outstanding in the run game. His blocks were very good. He got about three pancake blocks in the ball game, one of them on the very first drive. And I think you bring up a great point. You know, he has had, I think he has found a home. Now, I don't know how long term that home will be, because Luke is going to be a free agent. And at the end of the year, you know, he's got to make his mind up of where he wants to play. But who cares? You know, you deal with that when you get to that point. But right now, he had a very good game.
He did have a good game. But to say it's over, as if Luke Joeckel will never have any more blocking problems, I think is way too premature. He played a solid game, his first game at left guard. I hope it continues,
yeah.
Right? But they felt he had played very solid most of the year last year. And then what happened in Week 17 still happened. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, so I think in the back of Jaguar fans' minds is we've seen 3 years of not what we expected. One game, I think, for the majority of them is not erasing that. They're hopeful, but yeah. to declaratively say, it's over, get off his back, it's done, he's a new player now. One game does not erase 3 years for me. So we'll see. Here's Gus on Luke Joeckel yesterday.
He played pretty well. Listen, when you look at all the offensive linemen, there's, you know, not everybody graded out 100%. You know, there's going to be plays where some guys got some minuses. But I thought overall he played pretty well. I think it's what we anticipated. I think that he showed up and did some really good things. I think that in a lot of the areas he played better than we anticipated. So, you know, there's still some things where he can work on. But playing the position for the first time, a full game, you know, pretty good, pretty solid play.
All right, we got to take a time out here. Any further comment on Luke before we?
I think Gus is dead on the money. Dead on the money, and I'll save my comments for the other offensive line when we come back.
Yeah, we got to get into that because I want to get into the running game. You know, cause it seems like you're saying the O-line did pretty well for the most part, right? But yet 21 carries for 39 yards for T.J. Yeldon. We'll get into that and what Jeff saw in the film. Coming up as well, we've got This State in Football and the Honda Drive around the NFL. More of your calls welcome at 641-1010. And, of course, you can hop on board in a variety of ways on social media as well. Asking you today which player most needs to step up their game this week against the San Diego Chargers for the Jaguars to come home with that victory out on the West Coast. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Jeff Loggeman here with you on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Folks, here to tell you about FanDuel.com. You know what? First week of the fantasy football season, you always had the matchups dialed in. And in my head-to-head leagues, I had 17 games, went 9-8. Just kind of an so-so game. You know what saved my week? FanDuel.com. Monday Night Football, are you kidding me? Antonio Brown, D'Angelo Williams, thank you very much. Thank you for the work that Drew Brees and Brandon Cooks put in earlier than that. The beautiful thing is I didn't have to draft those guys. I picked them. I liked the matchups. I played them. I won a bunch of money this week on FanDuel. You can do it as well. You can get in for as low as a dollar. They have contests for everyone. Beginner's contests. We're only in it for new people. You're not going to be in the pool with the Sharks. So you have a chance to play for as little as a buck. You can play against us head-to-head for $5 every week at FanDuel.com/Mike. But if you're new to FanDuel, sign up now at FanDuel.com using promo code Mike. They're going to give you 5 free entries, a total value of up to $50. That's a free entry every week for the next 5 weeks. FanDuel.com. Enhance your fantasy experience. Be sports rich. That's FanDuel.com.
And now, This Date in Football History.
All right, This Date in Football History brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. On this date in 1973, Congress passed and sent a bill to President Richard Nixon, which enabled the lifting of football's blackout policy if the games were sold out 72 hours in advance. Prior to that, even sold-out home games were blacked out in every NFL market, including playoff games. In the previous round of playoffs, Nixon went to Pete Rozelle and said, if you lift the ban on blacking out the playoff games, I promise you I will veto any bill that tries to lift a blackout on the regular season games. He goes, just give us the playoff games, and I'll protect your regular season blackouts as long as I'm in power. Rozelle feared, though, that NFL playoff games would turn into less than sold-out stadiums and become more of a studio show, so he instead went and worked with Congress to get what he felt was a better deal passed, that they would lift the blackout on regular season games 72 hours in advance if they were sold out. That was passed on this date in 1973. In 1981, the Atlanta Falcons tied a record of points scored in a quarter, in the fourth quarter versus Green Bay. How many points did the Falcons put up in the fourth quarter that day?
35.
31. 31 fourth quarter points, tied a record. September 13th, 1987, quarterback Steve DeBerg established a franchise record with 5 TD passes and set Buccaneer marks for the most points with 48 and the largest margin of victory, 38, in a 48-10 victory over the Atlanta Falcons. Birthdays on this date include, in 1968, Brad Johnson, former Florida State quarterback, played with a number of teams in the National Football League, and of course, quarterback the Tampa Bay Bucks when they won their lone Super Bowl. He was a two-time Pro Bowler. He's 48 years old today. And A.J. McCarron, the most self-confident quarterback that I may have ever met, 26 years young today, born in this date in 1990. This date in football brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. They're right here in town on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done, if you're in the market for a family dentist, they're a certified Invisalign provider. They offer a 10% discount on all first-time customer initial visits. Call 620-9225 or visit jamesjmccall.com to get a complete list of their comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Well, as was feared, when Keenan Allen collapsed to the ground during the Chargers game against Kansas City on Sunday, Allen does have a torn ACL in his right knee, will miss the rest of the 2016 NFL season. The Jags, of course, in San Diego to play the Chargers this Sunday. Robert Griffin III has been placed on injured reserve by the Cleveland Browns after he broke a bone in his left shoulder. Archie 3 late in the Browns game on Sunday in Philadelphia took a big shot after trying to turn back up the field near the sideline, and after the game was clearly nursing the injured shoulder. RG3 could still return this season if the Browns choose to use the one IR designated to return designation that each NFL team has. Josh McCown is expected to be the Browns starter in the meantime. And finally, during the second game of last night's Monday Night Football doubleheader, as the Los Angeles Rams were getting steamrolled by San Francisco, a fan decided to run onto the field. Now, usually, the viewers, we get no coverage of such incidents, but Kevin Harlan on Westwood One gives us a live treatment, full radio play-by-play of the incident.
Third and four, looks into the nickel of San Francisco in the secondary. Hey, somebody has run out on the field. Some goofball in a hat and a red shirt. Now he takes off the shirt. He's running down the middle by the 50. He's at the 30. He's bare-chested and banging his chest. Now he runs the opposite way. He runs at the 50. He runs at the 40. The guy is drunk, but there he goes. The 20. They're chasing him. They're not going to get him. Waving his arms, bare-chested. Somebody stop
Look
that
out.
Man.
Look out. Here comes the blue coat.
Oh,
Kevin.
They got him.
Here comes
coming
the blue
from
coat.
The left. Oh, and they tackle him at the 40-yard line.
That was great. Did you see it last time we were watching the game?
No,
you see the guy sprint through the field, right? And you see him clearly. And you know, they always cut away. Chris Berman, we don't have to show this. But you knew something was going on because it went on for so long that they were just showing the sideline. And you could see in the corner, like just at the edge of the screen, guys running out there like there was mayhem. They could not get a hold of this guy last night.
What great instinct to just go into a play-by-play call of the guy.
That's a great play-by-play call, but it would have been better if Mike Curtis comes from the bench
and just
in full
boom.
Uniform and hammers him.
Yeah, you would expect that to happen at some point in time. I think the players nowadays are like, yeah, whatever, man. I'm making too much money to tackle this dude.
Hey, by the way, the ACL that Keenan Allen suffered, the all 22 end zone. It's not the all 22. It's the end zone shot of the NFL films.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which the game, the player, the team shoot. I'm going to show that on Film Room Friday. It does not look good. I mean, totally non-contact.
I can't watch those.
Make a cut, and we'll slow it down, and it's going to be showed on Film Room Friday.
Replay
on Jaguars.
It over and over and over again. Check it out.
It's crazy how that stuff happens. I mean, really, because you are talking about non-contact injuries where, you know, I don't even know if it's a false step. You know, it just happens. It's this freak thing that just happens. And, man, is it just devastating. These guys out for an entire year now.
Yeah, not non-contact. He was just running a route. He's getting vertical, and as he approaches the defender, he starts to chop his feet to plant and break left. And you can literally see the knee just go, whoop. I mean, but it's not grotesque, but I mean, you can just see it bend at an angle that it just normally doesn't do.
Right. I don't like that. I don't like seeing the body do things it is.
Well, for those that like it,
to.
Film Room Friday.
There you go, Film Room Friday. For those
I like it. I have no issue with it.
Stronger stomach than myself, apparently. Logs, let's talk running game for the Jags. I said this to Fred Taylor after the game, and I stand by it. I watched T.J. Yeldon. I thought he ran hard. I thought he made a number of guys miss. And the numbers are atrocious, 21 for 39. That's not what you're looking for, less than 2 yards a carry. But, man, I saw him hitting the backfield a lot. Now, I know they were run blitzing a lot in this game, but somebody's got to be somewhat at fault if your lead back has 39 yards on 21 carries. If if maybe I'm wrong, maybe Yeldon missed some holes or whatever, or but you're saying you thought the O-line played well. What went wrong in the running game?
Well, I think the first and foremost, I think not having Chris Ivory was a huge blow, and especially from a game plan standpoint, when you prepare all week and you know that you're going to be missing somebody, you can adjust. But when you go to the hotel the night before the game, all of a sudden you learn that, you know, because on Friday, Gus told everybody that we expect Chris Ivory to play, even though he was on the injury report.
And normal then, reps, he said.
Sure. And so you wake up on game day morning, if you're the offensive coordinator, and that's not what you had in the game plan, that hurts, you know. And it hurt in a couple areas. One is that it takes a lot of the load off of T.J. Yeldon for the first and second down reps, which allows T.J. Yeldon to be the third down back.
Right, and that's what killed him.
And then also, Chris Ivory can be a third down back. You know, Denard Robinson, you know, got blown up in a protection and wasn't very pretty. He's not nearly the runner that T.J. Yeldon is, and maybe if you had a fresher T.J. Yeldon and a Chris Ivory, maybe those numbers would have been different. Maybe the play calling would have been different in the entire game.
But in terms of the amount of penetration that Green Bay got, do you attribute that to missed blocks, or do you attribute that to just overloading against the run and selling out?
Well, a couple of them were one of them that was a tackle for a loss. It was actually not on the offensive line. It was on Allen Hurns. He's designed to block an edge player, which is Nick Perry. And Nick Perry darted to the inside, and Allen says, okay, he's going to be gone, and he goes up to the next level to block whoever else is going to be coming. Well, Nick Perry just plants his feet and then turns and comes back, and he's in the backfield for a 2 or 3 yard loss. So, I mean, a lot of times when you sit there, when you look at it and you go, okay, well, it's only, you know, 2-point-something yards a carry, it's not always on the offensive line. Some of that stuff was on the perimeter. Clay Matthews, remember, he darted up the field through a bunch formation. That's on the bunch formation. I mean, somebody's got to block Clay Matthews for like a 3 or 4 yard loss. I mean, there was probably about, what, 4 tackle for loss plays that I can remember
right
in the game. You take those minus plays out, and maybe the numbers.
There were some big, yeah, you know, I mean, yeah, 5-6 yard kind of things.
That hurts.
Right.
Yeah, and a couple of those were on where they were trying to run some misdirection, like a couple of play fakes, that kind of thing. And when Blake turns around, there's just, it's right there in his face.
Right.
A couple times in the game, yeah.
Here's Gus yesterday talking about the running game.
It felt like we were straining. It felt like we were running the ball hard. And then when I looked at the stats at the end of the game, you know, but there were some lost yardage runs, you know, that added up to it. But I felt like TJ ran really hard and made some people miss, and we just didn't get any explosive runs. But there's areas of improvement. We can strain, hold on longer to blocks, and block things a little bit better. So, you know, the stats really doesn't show it.
All right, let's move on to another call, 641-1010.
Yeah, we were just looking at the numbers from Sunday, and the Packers actually had 10 tackles for loss in the game against the Jacks. Now, the sacks go into that, too. So they got the 3 sacks, so 7 on
Hurns
run plays. Yeah, 7 on run plays where they tackled the Jags in the backfield.
Well, you had 3 sacks, plus the pass to Hurns on the so you had 6, I guess, on run plays, right? But that seems about right.
Yeah,
with the, you know, just thinking back to it, Justin's in Atlanta checking in this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Justin.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Jeff, what is the most definitive reason why we can't have Miles Jack, Paz, and Telvin on the field? Why can't we do that?
Well, when you play the defense that the Jaguars play, who plays what is what you've got to figure out if those three are on the field at the same time. Posluszny is a mic. You know, Telvin Smith is a weak side backer, so somebody has to play the auto. And the auto is a position that where the linebacker's on the line of scrimmage a lot of times, covering up the tight end. And to play that position, you need a body type that has length, you know, 6'3", 250 pounds. You know, Dan Scuda, what is he, 6'2", 250 pounds. You know, so and Miles Jack is, what is he, 6'1", 6'2"? I mean, he just doesn't have the body type to play that. He's a space player. He needs to be off the ball and to be able to utilize his speed. So are there certain packages that they could get the three of those on the field? Yes. But you got to remember one thing is that, you know, the nickel defense in the National Football League accounts for about 65% of the snaps total. So your base defense is probably in the 25% range because you also have dime. You know, so could he be on the field? Yes. Would you be limited in the packages that you could play? Absolutely, because you don't want him on the line of scrimmage, and you don't want Paul as an auto. You don't want Telvin Smith as an auto. You know, so it's going to be interesting to see how this kind of plays out as far as what role that he could play, because right now Miles Jack can play Mike, and he can play Will. And right now the backup auto is the guy that they signed from the Baltimore Ravens, Arthur Brown.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's not easy to do. Is it possible? Yes. I think sooner or later we're going to see Miles Jack replace Paul Posluszny as a nickel backer. He's just got too much speed. He's got too much ability to not have on the field when speed is paramount for execution.
A year from now, right, whatever happens this season, Miles Jack project to be your starting middle linebacker or your starting weak side linebacker?
Well, his natural position is Will. It's the weak side linebacker spot, which is what Telvin Smith plays.
Right.
You know, where is Telvin Smith at, you know, with his contract? I think he's going to be up after this year, maybe. You know, so you see what happens with that. I don't know. I mean, here's the best part. It's nice to have options.
Oh, sure.
I mean, that's a really good thing, you know, when you're, you know, the general manager and you've got some options.
Here's Gus yesterday on Miles Jack, specifically asked, how do you get him more involved?
I think with Miles, you know, he's learning both positions now, the Mike and the Will. So, and we really got him at the Will linebacker spot in the Atlanta game, you know, the last preseason game. So we're trying to do everything we can to speed this process up to see where he's at. You know, I think the mental side of the game, you know, this was a tough game mentally. Going into it. So I think, you know, where he understands the football 501 part is going to be big. He's made great strides now. We're going to keep pushing that because of his athleticism. But he's got to be able to know exactly what his responsibilities are at all times. And you saw it yesterday. If you're not on it all the time, these quarterbacks will make you pay.
And to kind of expand on what Gus Bradley's talking about when he says football 501, you know, when you go to college, you got different level of courses. You know, 101 is your very beginning basic classes. Then you go up to 201 and then 301 and then 401 and then 501. And what Gus is talking about is the complexity of the game. In other words, he's saying Miles Jack is not ready to play football 501 yet, which means that when he is ready to do that, he has the mental aspect of the game down, then he will play. You know, when you watch the Atlanta Falcons game, I was very impressed with some of the physical talents that Miles Jack has, as I was from watching his film at UCLA. He blows you away with some of his athletic tools. But when you watch him in the first couple steps and you put it on the clock, he's a little behind.
Mm-hmm.
He's still thinking. And as a linebacker, you know, this, you know, the Jaguars team is not about how can we find a way to get Miles Jack on the field. The football games are about how can we put the best players on the field to win a ball game. And right now, the best players that give them a chance are the combination on base defense of Skuda, Telvin Smith, and Paul Posluszny. When Miles Jack shows that he makes them better, then he will play.
All right, we'll come back. We'll take more of your calls if you're so inclined at 641-1010. We'll check in on the text line driven by Duval Ford for the first time this morning as well. You can hit us up on social media for the question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, asking you which Jaguar player needs to step his game up the most this week, specifically against San Diego, to help get a win against the Chargers. With Jeff Lagerman, with Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. This is Jaguars Today live at Everbank on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, we got some tickets you can get your hands on. We're going to do that coming up in a few minutes. I just want to prime the pump, so to speak. Be listening. We've got a certificate that will entitle you to two General Bowl tickets to any Jaguars game, excluding the Broncos game. Okay, so any other home game, excluding that. And each winner this year, every time we give away tickets, will be eligible for a dinner with Sindarik Marks at Three Forks and a set of Jaguar-themed rings, all courtesy of Global Diamonds. That means if you win these tickets, you'll be in the drawing for a chance to have dinner with Sindarik Marks and win the set of Jaguar-themed rings from Global Diamonds. So be listening for your opportunity to score those certificates to apply to those tickets coming up here shortly.
That'll be a good dinner now.
Oh, yeah.
Are you kidding?
He's a riot.
If you don't win this week, we'll have another pair next week of the certificates. So
absolutely. Yeah, Sen's maybe the best personality on the team.
Great guy.
I imagine he can put it away at the dinner table as well.
Probably.
So the courses will keep coming your direction.
Hopefully they don't schedule those in season. Yeah, we don't want them to get a little portly.
True.
You know, we don't need Sen going to Three Forks and going up past 304.
Hey, let him get a couple of extra workouts in before he goes. He'll be fine. One-timer, Sen. Those are coming up. In the meantime, 641-1010, if you'd like to get on board, that is the way to do it. Logs, we've talked about a lot of aspects. Anything that you wanted to bring up so far, or somebody you wanted to highlight, good or bad, that we haven't talked about yet?
Brandon Linder. I thought Brandon Linder was exceptional at center, and I was telling you guys this during the break. He had this one play to where they bring in like a double A-gap blitz to where they're kind of crossing the guys, and so Linder and T.J. Yeldon have to pick him up. And Linder goes to block the correct way to his left, and then TJ kind of goes and blocks the same guy, so the other guy that's looping around to Linder's right is going to be free because TJ's not coming back to go over there. So Linder actually literally picks his guy up or maneuvers him over so that he can also block this other one coming in on the right side of him. So he's blocking two guys, and he moved one of them to block the other guy. I mean, some of the things that he can do, he's just so strong, very powerful. I was kind of skeptical about the move of him going to center because, you know, center sometimes it's a position that I always kind of thought, you know, somebody has to do it for a very long time to get comfortable at it. And he stepped in, and it's been seamless and very impressive because, you know, if you want your best interior player at any position, it would be center. So that's good for the Jaguars. And A.J. Cann, I thought, had a very good game. Parnell, I thought, had a good game. Kelvin Beachum faded a little bit. He didn't give up any whiffs or anything. He had one play to where he missed the safety on a blitz. He overset, and it looked like the knee was just so fatigued. He didn't have anything left in the tank to plant and come back. He lost a little bit of that quickness.
Not totally surprising there,
no,
right?
Have? Like, I mean, I think in the game there were 72 snaps, counting penalties and everything, maybe, or 72 snaps in total. And so he went from 26 to 72. In a matter of 2 weeks, and it's his first or second game back from ACL reconstruction. Very impressive. And I talked to him after the game, and he said he battled through it. And it doesn't surprise me at all that he got fatigued. I mean, that's just part of the process. But seeing how he performed in the first game, that's a good sign for the Jaguars.
All right, question for you coming off the text line, driven by Duval Ford from Ian. He says, which scenario makes a better team, scheming to your player's strengths or sticking to your scheme even if it doesn't complement your player's skill set? Is there any flexibility in the Jaguars' defensive scheme to get the best players on the field?
Well, I mean, that's a question that doesn't factor in anything the opponent does. I mean, it's, you know, you always try, and the great coaches are the ones that utilize the strengths of their personnel. You adapt to what you have. I think any coach that has a scheme and they're trying to win and they're trying to force square pegs into round holes never works. And so for me, it's about great coaches are the ones that find out what his players do best and allows them to do that.
Let's see what we've got here. Jordan from Virginia says somebody on that defensive line needs to get to the quarterback. Too many missed opportunities against Green Bay.
Well, it's, you know, to go back what I said at the beginning, you know, when you play Aaron Rodgers, it's a very different approach than when you're playing anybody else because he's so effective once he leaves the pocket at making things happen. So the game plan is very different. You know, that goes back to what I was saying about how, you know, is it scheme or is it player as well? You got to factor opponent in as well because what an opponent does best has to be into that equation. And with the Packers, keeping Aaron Rodgers in the pocket – was the priority number one when he got the ball in his hands.
Well, how will the approach be different against Phillip Rivers?
You know, Phillip Rivers doesn't move very much. You know, he's very good at using his mind to hurry things up as opposed to extend the play. You're going to take chances against Phillip Rivers. When Phillip Rivers is on the run, you know, he's not going to hurt you, not like Aaron Rodgers. Phillip Rivers hurts you by dissecting and analyzing from the pocket. It will be more aggressive on the edge. You're not that concerned about flushing him from the pocket because when you watch Phillip Rivers run, it's kind of painful. You know what he looks like? He kind of looks like a little bit like Joe Namath back in the old days.
Yeah, and
back when he was older.
Which makes that third and long last year that much more particularly galling to see him run around the right corner there and pick that up.
Yes.
Logs got this one in as well on the text line. Ask Logs, where was Gibson's the thing? Don't you hate it when your screen just jumps on you and when you're reading? All right, here we go. Ask Log, where was Gibson's contribution? Did he watch Gibson at all? He definitely didn't stand out like we thought he would. Your comment on that?
I thought Gibson had a very solid game. He didn't miss one tackle. As a free safety, you're the last line of defense. You've got to be a sure tackler, and that's one thing that he's shown me all preseason in practice, also in the games that he's played limited action. But also in this game that he didn't miss any tackles. You know, perfect example of that is when Eddie Lacy broke that long run when Cyprian missed the tackle, Gibson's one that knifed him out of bounds or knifed his legs out to save a touchdown. You know, so, you know, free safeties are the type of players that, you know, every week just because they're not making an interception or something else doesn't mean that they didn't have a good game. You know, a lot of times.
Right.
You know,
you're not going to exactly. What does Tayshaun Gibson have to do? Have 20 picks and run them all back to the house?
And I think when you go back to the Green Bay game, we were talking about this a moment ago. Look, they didn't make a whole lot of plays downfield.
No, 9 yards passing.
Right, and I think that is kind of when we've been watching for 2 years. It seems like there's four or five of those every week. And on Sunday against Aaron Rodgers, there was the one play, but we were talking about that was more on Sip than it
was.
Okay,
let's talk about that play. Okay, the scramble. To where Randall Cobb catches the ball in deep center field, and if the ball had been better, he might have been able to stay on his feet and keep running. Right? You remember Devon House had to tag him down.
Right.
It's a kind of a flip flop. You're trying to disguise the coverage. So Gibson actually comes up in coverage. Cyprian goes back to the deep third, and then you have a long crossing route, and Gibson is taking the over route. It's called an over route. He's taking that guy because he is the up safety. The back middle safety never leaves the middle third. I mean, that's like, okay, here's what I got to do. You can literally backpedal and not move. Cyprian bites up on the over route, okay, which Gibson has got, and then leaves Randall Cobb coming from the backside where Prince Amukamara was, and he's literally traveling right through the deep third. That's Cyprian's guy. I mean, that's, you know.
Well, look, right now it seems to be an issue. Right, with him in certain aspects.
Well, I guarantee you that he's not feeling very good about his performance, and I guarantee you that the coaching staff pointed out that he shouldn't feel very good about his performance. And look, I'm not saying that the game's on him because the game's not on him. I'm just saying that he needs to be better as a defender. But you could also say the same thing, and that some of those edge guys, you know, Anik Ngakoue, Dante Fowler, they got to be better when they push the pocket and you're trying to build that fence and keep Aaron Rodgers contained in the pocket. You can do it more effectively by pushing your guy back in and then falling off one way or the other to making a play.
One of the other big additions this year, obviously, was Malik Jackson. I know a lot of fans, they didn't see an impact. It's kind of the Gibson thing, too. When you don't see the impact splash plays with these guys that you bring in that you're so excited about, how did you feel Malik Jackson played?
Okay. Okay.
Outside of the penalty, obviously.
Yeah, okay. I think he can be much better. And I think that this is a week that I think we'll see him play well. The San Diego Chargers have some issues on the offensive line. Matt Slauson is converted guard, now playing center for the San Diego Chargers. The left guard for the San Diego Chargers, and I'd have to get my game board out to see who it is not very good. The right guard is just okay. I mean, this is a game that I think that the interior players for the Jaguars defensively, Derek Marks, Malik Jackson, Roy Miller, I think that they should be able to play very well.
Here's one last cut from Gus. This is talking about the pass rush in general this week.
One of the things that we looked at was the number of explosive plays they had. Now, if you look at last year, I think it was about 6 a game. But when Jordy was there, it jumped. And he's back this year. And a lot of these explosive plays came off extended plays. So we decided to go with more of a controlled pass rush. We knew that, you know, it's tough on the defense line. They're going after it. We did not turn them loose. It was not a game like that. It was more of a detailed pass rush to really try to constrict him, to force him to stay in the pocket. And even when we did that, you'll see it on film, there's times that we got upfield too far and he extended the play. So to put it on the D-line and say, boy, we just really didn't feel you, I would have to take a lot of the blame for that if you didn't feel that because of what we were going in there trying to do. I think they had 5 explosive passes. They had 199 yards passing, you know, and part of it was to try, and one explosive pass, I think, came off an extended play. That's what we were hoping, you know, that we can control that enough to keep those explosive passes down. It wasn't enough.
Yeah, Gus saying that, you know, I take the blame for that. He doesn't need to take the blame for that. I mean, that's a game plan thing.
That was a success.
Yeah.
Right? In the sum total, you say, well, you didn't sack him, but you held Aaron Rodgers to throw him for 199 yards in this game.
Yeah, you don't need to apologize for that.
Right.
Or take the blame for that.
You had four three and outs. You held him to field goals in the second half, and you got the crucial three and out at the end of the game when you needed it. I thought, you know, you look at 27 points, you're like, all right, but you consider all the factors. I think the defense played pretty well as a whole.
They played okay. I don't want to say they played well. I think they played okay. It's a good start.
All right, but
it's something they got to build on.
We'll come back. Got another segment to go here. We'll take a look at the fan feedback spotlight, which particular Jaguar needs to step up for this week's game against San Diego to ensure a Jaguar victory. And right now, we'll take caller. How about caller number 7? This is a pretty good prize right here. A certificate for 2 General Bowl tickets to any Jaguar game, excluding the Broncos game. And each winner will go into a drawing. Every time we give away tickets, they'll be eligible for a chance at a dinner with Sendarik Marks at Three Forks and a set of Jaguar-themed rings, all courtesy of Global Diamonds. Caller 7 at 641-1010. That's the phone number. Give Tyler a chance to do his business, and he'll get to you. If you're on the phone, don't hang up. Caller 7 at 641-1010 wins that certificate for a pair of tickets to any Jaguar home game other than the Denver game coming up this year. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Jeff Logman back with more Jaguars today in a moment on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Hey, folks, Mike Dempsey here for Dandy Foods. Yeah, you know what? It may not be some fancy restaurant, but you don't have to wait to win a contest to be a winner with Dandy. You can eat a great lunch or really a snack on the go. Breakfast items, they got those now. And they're always wholesome. They're always quality. They're always fresh. Great companies that they work with. Great providers of all the delicious meats and cheeses. Fresh baked bread made here locally in Jacksonville by Flowers Baking Company. You can go on and on and on. Variety, yeah, Dandy's got it. The great Cuban sandwich, the classic for them. Tuna salad, chicken salad, you name it. They've got all kinds of exotic new sandwiches with the Anytime Deli line as well. They've got breakfast sliders. They've got lunchtime light wraps. They may be light, but they'll fill you right up, and you can't do better for food on the go. Pop into your local Kangaroo Express or Circle K. Don't waste your lunch hour sitting in the drive-thru line and get substandard food. Head right to the fresh case and do what I do, folks. Go out and make yours a Dandy and do it today.
Jaguars Daily is brought to you by Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the official sports medicine provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Now, running back Chris Ivory remained hospitalized on Monday after being admitted with a general medical condition that forced him to miss Sunday's game against the Packers. Now, the team said on Monday that his status for Sunday's game against San Diego is still in question. Now, in his place against the Packers was T.J. Yeldon, and head coach Gus Bradley talked about the takeaways from Sunday's run game performance.
It felt like we were straining. It felt like we were running the ball hard. And then when I looked at the stats at the end of the game, you know, but there were some lost yardage runs, you know, that added up to it. But I felt like T.J. ran really hard and made some people miss, and we just didn't get any explosive runs. We can strain, hold on longer to blocks, and block things a little bit better.
This has been Jaguars Daily brought to you by JOI. I'm Jordan DeArmond.
This is the quarterback of your Jacksonville Jaguars, Blake Bortles, and you are listening to Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
All right, a couple of things before we get to the fan feedback spotlight today, which is brought to you by the Tom Bush Family Dealerships. Here's one we haven't touched on this. The interception basically started off the game for the Jags. Ball a little behind. We should have caught it. Combination
both.
Of both, right?
Yeah, both. I mean, the ball's behind, but you know, Marquise has to be able to do something with that. Blake Bortles has got to have a better location for it.
Yeah, so both on both guys.
Yeah,
basically that's what we said yesterday. Just checking your opinion on that. Just because we discussed this off the air here amongst the three of us, I'll bring it up on the air. Somebody texted and tell Jeff that Pro Football Focus graded Jokel as having a bad game, Jeff. So clearly you can't be right. Your thoughts on Pro Football Focus's grades this week?
Well, I mean, I saw Tony pull it up for me, and T.J. Lang and then Lane Taylor had like top 20 grades in the National Football League. And from the film that I watched of those two guys, I don't see it. Brandon Linder had an average grade. Brandon Linder was making blocks like the play that I pointed out where he moved the guy to block two. That I don't know how many people in the National Football League could do that. So to give Brandon Linder an average grade, I don't understand that. Jalen Ramsey is like ranked 80th
in the league.
They gave
him a terrible grade for his play.
And how many completions happened around Jalen Ramsey?
It would be zero.
Jalen says no one completed the pass on me.
And the way he played the game physically, I'm going to show actually two plays on Film Room Friday that will show a jam that he had that actually ate up two guys, and then the play after that to where he attacked Randall Cobb on a short underneath completion where Randall Cobb was designed to come up and block him to free Jordy Nelson. Now, he didn't make the tackle, but I thought it was a strong statement play by Jalen Ramsey. So, you know, look, I'm not going to sit here and go crazy over Pro Football Focus, but, you know, I guarantee you that, you know, 90-plus percent of the guys that are watching it, you know, don't understand certain things. Just like the play I pointed out with Cyprian supposed to be at middle field, they probably have no idea how to grade that.
And I think I honestly think they put their grades up before they even watch the 22 because they go up so quick. I don't think there's any way that they're watching the 22. They're just watching the TV broadcast basically and trying to decide who's at fault for some of these things. I did hear Tony Boselli last night on Jaguars Monday, and I wanted to get your reaction to this. He said that watching it, Jalen Ramsey may be the best player on the Jaguars defense already.
Oh, you can make that argument. I mean, you could make that argument. I mean, just watching the physical tool set that he has, the way he plays the game. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have any problem, you know, with saying that. You hope that at some point it becomes an argument to where you're talking, okay, is he the best player? Is Dante Fowler the best player? Is Yannick Ngakoue the best player? Is Malik Jackson the best player? Telvin Smith? You know, when you get to that point, you know, that's where you need to be. Now, in that game, I would say defensively, you might argue that Telvin Smith was the best player on the field.
Yeah, this week.
Yeah,
for
but
sure.
I mean, but as far as watching the physical talents and traits on film of what these guys can do, yeah, I don't have no problem with Jalen Ramsey being that guy.
Right, let's take a look at the fan feedback today that we got asking which player needs to step up their game the most, which individual player to better secure a victory against San Diego on Facebook. We'll start there. Dalton went with Allen Robinson. He said, primarily on the last drive, somebody had to step up and make a play. Could have caught a game winner, could have blocked for Hearns better. I know I'm critical, but big-time players need to make big-time plays in big-time situations.
It's a great point. You know, and I don't think anybody was more disappointed than Allen Robinson himself. I talked to him after the game. You guys heard it. I mean, he could barely talk. And, you know, I give him a lot of credit for still answering questions as best that he can. But I guarantee Allen Robinson is not happy with how he performed, and he expects better out of himself. And that's okay. Defensively, I mean, my pick is Cyprian, especially this week. You know, when the Chargers are missing Keenan Allen, I mentioned earlier about – the more that Phillip Rivers will rely on Danny Woodhead. That also goes for Antonio Gates, who is still a marvelous player, catching a lot of balls, and guess who covers backs and tight ends? Strong safeties.
Yeah, and Gates pointed this out several times this summer, 8 touchdowns away from the all-time record. You know Phillip Rivers will try to get him that mark this year. Not that he's not going to be heavily involved anyway, but I think there would be a little extra emphasis on looking for him
in the red
zone. I can assure
you he will have at least 8 touchdowns this year.
That's what I've been telling people, exactly. All right, a couple more. Roy said he'd like to see improvement by Paz. He said, stands in the middle of the field, covers no one, or rushes and gets blocked, and finally slowly chases the ball carrier.
Well, I don't think that's a very fair assessment or analysis. Paul is an excellent player against the run. There's no question, though, that at some point you got to get better production out of that spot when you go to nickel. The one touchdown throw times, you know, he doesn't feel things behind him, you know, but that's Paul. And that, hey, look, if people are complaining about Paul Posluszny and the level of performance that he has for this football team, go take a look at the other 31 NFL teams and see if you're going to get a whole lot better.
Tony, get a few on Twitter there.
Here's what we got on Twitter. It's going to be a reading comprehension day. We did ask for a player, guys. From Irish Jaguar, I think if we play like we did against Green Bay, we'll win regardless. Sip, maybe, for him. From Michael, Dante Fowler Jr. needs to pressure Rivers and make him throw the ball before he is ready. From Jeff, Malik Jackson, without question, he was nearly invisible aside from 2 penalties. From Johnny, he said Blake Bortles. From Jags fan, we got TJ Yeldon, 21 for 39, just not getting the job done. And from Chad, another vote for Blake Bortles, needs to step his game up and will us to victory. Hashtag steal the show. Hashtag take it to the limit.
All right, Loggy, before we get out of here today, where are we going to catch you the rest of the week, sir?
Let's see. Tonight we have Jaguars All Access at 7 o'clock, Channel 4. Tomorrow night it is Jaguars Live, Wednesday. That's Wednesday now at 8 o'clock. Gus Bradley Show on these airwaves and the Jaguars Radio Network starting at 6, and then Jaguars Thursday after that at 7. Film Room Friday on Jaguars.com. And then Saturday morning, the outdoor show. I will be calling in from San Diego.
That's a busy man right there.
That's early.
Yeah, you think?
You ever do any West
Holy
Coast fishing?
Cow. What
I'll
time?
Call in.
What time is that going to be out there?
Well, it's 7 o'clock, so it's 3 hours, 4 a.m., but I don't know if I'll be on right at the top of the show, but I will be calling in.
All right.
All right, there he goes. Jeff Logman, thank you, brother. We'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Enjoyed it.
Check the tape Tuesday here on Jaguars Today. That does it for us. Thanks all of you out there for listening and giving us feedback on social media and what have you. For Fat Tony, for Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey wrapping things up here for Jaguars Today. Stick around because the Midday Chalk is straight ahead on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Third and four, looks into the nickel of San Francisco in the secondary. Hey, somebody has run out on the field. Some goofball in a hat and a red shirt. Now he takes off the shirt. He's running down the middle by the 50. He's at the 30. He's bare-chested and banging his chest. Now he runs the opposite way. He runs at the 50. He runs at the 40. The guy is drunk, but there he goes. The 20. They're chasing him. They're not going to get him. Waving his arms. Bare-chested. Somebody stop
Look
that
out.
Man.
Here comes the blue coat. Kevin.
Oh, they got him.
Here comes
They're coming
the blue
from the
coat.
Left. Oh, and they tackle him at the 40-yard line.
You guys have a good day. Peace.